Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry. I am your host, Dr. Martin Mendelson, a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and a thought leader. And I'm joined by my dear friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley. He's a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dentists pursue wellness in dentistry. And so today, we're going to actually be talking about how to support one another and how to support our colleagues, whether that's in person and online as well. We're going to talk a lot about online stuff. And so if you end up liking what you're hearing here today, or if you joined us previously and you haven't left us a review, please go ahead and do that. You know, this is our way of giving back to our community. And so we would just kindly ask for you to just to take a brief few seconds, give us a review, share with a colleague that may want to hear about the topics that we discuss on this podcast focused on dentists and wellness and dentistry. And if you haven't gotten enough of us here, you can join us in person this coming November in Irvine, California, where Kyle and I present our in-person course called Lightside Live that focuses on wellness and dentistry, purpose, personal values, and how to break the stigma of isolation and how to support each other in this big profession of dentistry. So with that, Kyle, we're going to be talking today about supporting each other. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Martin, this is something that I have to say I was guilty of not supporting my colleagues early in my career.
Yeah.
I was one of these dentists that thought I was all that in a bag of chips very early on in my career, and that I knew everything and everybody knew nothing. And so I would have cases that would come to me and I would say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that it looks like this. And there's this open margin and there's recurrent decay and the root canal didn't go to the end of the apex. And that's why you have this periapical radial lucency. And really, I was one of these dentists that threw other dentists under the bus until, guess what? It happened to me too. So when I was the dentist on the receiving end of that, meaning a patient called me that had moved or that had gone to another dentist for some reason, and they said, and they called and said, yeah, I was just at the dentist, and they said this work that you did was poor quality and needed to be replaced, and I just had it done 3 years ago, and I paid all this money. Gosh, that was a wake-up call. And what I realized is that you really can't judge another dentist unless you are in the room. And not only that, if you were going through what they were going through outside of their life. So really, you can almost never judge another dentist.
Oh, heck no. And I mean, even the ADA has, you know, ethical standards, one of which that I always remember from dental school. Don't ask why it stuck with me, but it's called justifiable criticism. You're not supposed to sit there and you know, complain about another dentist and make all these suppositions and statements like, well, I would never do it that way, or this isn't done right, etc. There's ways to do that to still kind of support your colleagues and as well as give the patient the treatment they need. But I know today we're really focusing on kind of supporting each other within the confines of the profession, dentist to dentist, right?
Yeah.
And so this also goes to like social media and stuff like that too. And the idea of competition and those kind of things. I mean, you could make an argument that there is no competition. And you'd be like, what are you talking about, Martin? There's like 20 dentists on my block or in your building. There's how many dentists? What'd you say?
52, I think.
52, right? But here's the numbers, and numbers are numbers. There's about 300 million people in the United States. There's about 200,000 dentists. If we accept that only half of that 300 million goes to the dentist, that's still 150 million for 200,000 dentists. Do you think there's enough work to go around, right? Mm-hmm. So we can make a choice to either engage in what's going on outside of our four walls or focus on what's happening within our four walls. It's a choice, right?
Well, let's talk about where this discussion came from, which is you and I are on a lot of Facebook groups, forums, things like this. And you see dentists that really talk so rudely to others based on a clinical situation or a personal thing.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to see.
Yeah.
Now, before, as I say that it's sad to see, I kind of understand where it's coming from. And that is because so many of us love our profession. And unfortunately, so many of us see our profession as our purpose in life. We don't separate these two.
Yeah.
So when you see someone who's doing something different than you, it's almost like they're saying something's wrong with your political view, or saying your mom is ugly, or saying, you know, your religion is wrong. I mean, really, we are like, it's like a religion to us. Dentistry is like a religion to us. And it's like an ideology. And so if someone posts an inlay and you're a crown person and you don't think inlays work, you say you're an idiot. Those never work. I actually just saw this on one of my friends' Instagrams the other day.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And there are certain groups that really try to police it to, you know, to the best of their ability. And I really applaud them for doing so. But, you know, I follow a pretty simple golden rule, which is if you would never say it to my face, don't you dare type it. And if you think it's okay to type it, well, then we got a whole bunch of other problems. But seriously, though, like, you know, didn't the people who raised you, whomever that was, teach you better manners than that? It's unbelievable to me, the level of rudeness that has come up amongst our colleagues online. Now, to some degree, it's kind of an interesting discussion. Why do I say it that way? Because for most of us, if we roll back the clock, our experience in dental school was not exactly positive. And the feedback that we received wasn't exactly positive. And there were some shining lights of faculty that, you know, that really made an impact on us in a positive way. For me, it was, you know, Dr. Sharon Siegel, Dr. Karen Ferrone, the list goes on. And yet there were some others that I certainly won't mention that were the antithesis of that. So to some degree, I could almost argue that I get it. I'll put that in air quotes for those listening, relative to we were raised as baby dentists in a negative, condescending, judgmental space, but it's our choice not to live that way as an adult dentist, to continue the analogy, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, there's a lot of that happening in the medical world, like how residencies, there's this guy that I follow. I can't remember his name. He's an MD, but he basically had a mental breakdown and now talks about burnout, and how in medical residencies, and this still happens in all surgery residencies, they're working 24-hour shifts.
Yeah.
And they're doing surgery. I mean, the research is there. We know people need to sleep, but why do they still do that? Because the people before them did that. And they say, well, I had to do that to get through residency, so you should have to do that too. You know, in the 70s, we only got to sleep 2 hours a night, so you're going to only sleep 2 hours a night. Yep. It's like, let's get modern here, people.
Yeah.
Just because dental school for my dad was way worse than me. Why should I have to have terrible experience like he had?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he only had a few females in his class. And he said that the female student doctors would go up and ask the professor a question. The professor would simply turn the other way and walk away, as if she didn't exist. He had things happen like they would go up and show their denture wax up, you know, where we set up all the teeth. And they would say, this is horrible. And they would throw it on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking the model.
Yeah.
Having 28 teeth go all which way that this student just spent 9 hours doing on a Saturday. Just because that happens doesn't mean that should continue in our profession.
No, something happened to me when I was even at Spear. I was talking to a colleague, and I was talking to a dentist colleague, and one of my Spear colleagues was standing there, one of our advisors, who's just a great person, really like her and her family. And we were talking about a workshop or a course or a membership. I don't remember what we were talking about. This was about 10 years ago. And this gentleman is looking to describe it in a way, negotiate. And he looks at me and he goes, well, I don't mean to Jew you down or anything. And I just looked at him and I'm thinking to myself, okay, even if you thought that, why would you say that? And why would you think it's appropriate to say that, particularly in a professional context? And then thirdly, do you know that I'm Jewish?
Right. Yeah.
And so there's certain things that just come out of our mouths and you think to yourself, what are you doing? Why would you do that? And so I I'm not sitting here saying that we need to walk around with filters.
No.
But I am sitting here saying that we need to walk around with at least a civility filter amongst colleagues, because as you say all the time, nobody knows what a fellow dentist life is like other than a fellow dentist. So why, oh, why don't we have a little bit of empathy and compassion for our fellow colleagues? If we don't, who does?
Yeah, I like how you said that. We don't have to have a, we don't want you to think you can't be honest.
Yeah.
But there is a way of disagreeing with somebody that is very respectful. And I didn't tell you the story beforehand, but a few days ago, I posted a carousel that talks about separating your purpose in life from your profession.
Mm-hmm.
And it did really well. I got a lot of shares. I got a lot of comments, got a lot of support. However, I did get some people that said negative things, that DM'd me negative things, that even shared it and said that they disagreed. One of the shares came from a doctor. It was such a great experience to have someone disagree with me this way. He said something like, Dr. Kyle Stanley is great, and I usually agree with many of what he says. However, in this one, I don't think that, you should separate. Your purpose in life can be dentistry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so respectfully done that I messaged him and I just said, it's great to have people that disagree with me. Thank you for being so civil in the way you did it. There's a lot of other people that wouldn't have done this in such a respectful way.
Yeah.
And he wrote back something like, I like what you do. And thanks for, I don't know, something like that. Basically thank mm-hmm. me for thanking him kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It ended with have a good week and hope you're doing well. And this was something that was disagreeing with something that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah.
But it was so nice to see two adults that did it in a respectful way. And this just happened right before you and I got on in another podcast that I host. I was on with Christian Coachman, and who is one of my mentors, and we were disagreeing with something, but it was done in a respectful way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah. I'll give you another disagreeing yet with respect example. So about a year ago-ish, there was a fellow dentist that commented on LinkedIn that he just went to this whitening course. He really enjoyed it. DM me if you want the notes. Remember this? And so I messaged him privately and I said, hey, listen, I would never put this on a public forum. You know, as a speaker and as someone who, has and or is associated with an educational institution, what you're offering to share is intellectual property. And you use the term expert. And there's a reason why these people are experts, because they spent many years, effort, hours, time, usually money as well, to get to where they are. And he kind of piped back respectively and as saying, well, there's a lot of people that took the course and this is an elective procedure anyway. And so then I piped back again. And I think I got a little ahead of myself in how I was describing things, where I was like, look, they're experts for a reason, et cetera, et cetera. I said, all I'm asking for you to consider is that how is this any different from somebody coming into your practice and expecting you to provide care for free because there's 20 other dentists in the community, right? And so he said, I do understand what you're saying. I didn't think of it that way. He didn't agree with me, but at least
And that's fine, right?
And that's fine, right?
But you can do it in a respectful way. I think what you were saying was we don't have to have a filter, but I think if our reflex can be kindness or understanding, that would be a nice way to think about it. And just like the example that I gave with someone disagreeing with one of my posts, and even he shared my post tagged my name.
Mm-hmm.
And just usually people wouldn't do that, right? If they're disagreeing with it, they wouldn't tag me so that I could see
Sure,
it.
sure,
You know,
sure.
they would screenshot it or hide it. I think if we can have our default be kindness, that's the way to go. However, what I'll say is that is a learned thing. That is
Yeah.
a practice thing
Yeah.
because the old me, even though this guy did it respectfully, the old me probably would have messaged him something bad.
Yeah.
Like, probably would have mentioned something like, well, blah, 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 blah. Stop following me then if you don't want to do this, or, you know.
Yeah.
I've had to learn this, and it came from going through seeing a lot of negative comments on posts or ads when you're kind of a person on social media. Part that comes with it is that 1% that is can be very negative and annoying and rude and dangerous.
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking, in the lines of respectful disagreement, is it kindness or is it curiosity? So let me explain. What would it be like if we navigated through, let's say, social media with, instead of a judgmental slant, a curious slant, meaning, I wonder why they said that, or why did they say that, or where do I think are they coming from, versus what, you're an idiot. I mean, what if we could do it that way? So, there are some people out there that might feel like, well, kindness is a little too mushy-gushy, whatever. It's like, no, okay, so let's take kindness out of the picture. Let's just go with curiosity versus
Well,
judgment.
there's this quote that my friend Simon Chard reminded me of the other day when we were interviewing him on a podcast, and that was strong opinions loosely held. And I think that if you can have strong opinions that are loosely held, it allows you to think twice about it and say, oh, this person disagreeing with me, there may be a reason for that. Maybe there's an unknown unknown that I don't know about that I should look into.
Oh, 100%. And if we're going to consider ourselves scientists at our core, don't we need to be that way as a foundation? Because if we're going to sit here and go that we're evidence-based people that are driven by evidence-based data and decisions, why then can't we extrapolate and extend that to how we interact with the world?
Yes.
Right? And so we never talk politics on this podcast, and I'm not going to go there, but here's what I will say. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. If you have an opinion that's based on an emotion, not a fact, then you have to take a step back and go, okay, so where is this coming from? Why do I feel this way? What are the actual facts in the situation? And if I were sitting in a debate with somebody and had to actually defend my position, could I?
Based on facts.
Based on facts.
Yeah.
Because, I can hear people right now thinking, well, I don't need to defend my whole life, based on facts. No. What are we talking about? We're talking about collegial interaction here.
Right.
No, it is what it is. So,
Yeah. I
it's.
just think we have enough negativity as dentists
Oh, yeah.
in the media
Yeah.
with our patients,
Yeah.
with our team.
Yeah.
You know, you meet people, say you're a dentist, they're like, oh, gross. You look at people's mouths all day, or oh, gosh, don't you guys all want to kill yourselves? And we don't also need it from our colleagues.
Yeah.
No one understands a dentist like another dentist. Think of how connected you can be with that person. And if we stuck together, and I don't mean sticking together for people that are doing unethical things or
Oh, no.
overcharging
No,
patients
no,
or
no.
something like this, of course. But just because they used Emax when you thought you should use zirconia,
Yeah.
they're not an idiot, right?
No. 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 No.
And this has been hard for me because I'm not trying to boast, but I've been on the forefront of some ideas. Like, you know, I brought this whole idea of lip lifting, using plastic surgery into the dental world. I was very early on building my AI company, Pearl. A lot of the research that I've done has been the first time this has happened. So when you bring new concepts, get a lot of flack for it.
Oh, yeah.
And I
Oh, yeah.
remember one story where I was speaking on the main stage of the Seattle Study Club meeting, and I was talking about this idea of lip lifting.
Yep.
which I had published about. I had been lecturing on at that point for maybe 8 years already. I had gone around the world. I'd been teaching courses. And I usually got a lot of really, really good feedback. However, with this group, I got some great feedback. And I also heard, like within 10 minutes, that there were a lot of oral surgeons talking a lot of shit behind my back.
Yeah.
And do you know the reason why?
Mm.
The reason why was because I was showing plastic surgeons doing this when they could do it in their states.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, initially, I was really pissed off. And I still think that people took it way too far. I mean, people were saying we should have him banned from Seattle Study Club. He should never be able to speak at a symposium again. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, people had blocked me on social media, these certain people that really disliked what I was saying. And I look back now, and you know what it did? It allowed me to change my wording. And say, yeah, plastic surgeon can do this. But also, depending on the state or the country, your oral surgeon colleagues can do this as well if they know how to do it.
Yeah, totally. You made me think of something I haven't thought of in a while about, wow, probably 10, 12 years ago now, something like that. Spear launched an initiative to do some implant surgical training. But there were a lot of protocols in place. Like, this wasn't for GPs. This was with GPs, meaning that you had to come with your surgeon.
Yeah.
And so this was like a teamwork type of a thing. And no disrespect to the AAP, but the president at the time took a whole editorial out about how horrible spear education was for doing this. And I'm sitting here going, GPs are placing implants anyway. Why would you not want to teach them how to do it in concert with their surgeons?
Yeah.
So that's the backstory. Here's the part that really blew my mind. I was standing at one of our spear summits, and one of these surgeons, who I think might have been in some part of leadership, either state or national, I don't remember, who was just not happy about this at all. And he's coming at me. And I finally looked at him and I said, so let me ask you this, because we were in agreement that GPs were placing implants anyway. I said, let me ask you this. So from what you're saying, you would rather have an untrained colleague place an implant, have it fail to the detriment of the patient so that they could present in your office and you can fix it. And he goes, yes. And I thought, whoa,
yeah.
How is that in the best interest of the patients, right? Mm-hmm. But the level of, let's call it smack, that was going around, that you experienced, that, you know, Spear had to endure, when at the end of the day, you're just trying to do the right thing for people, is pretty incredible. Pretty incredible.
I went through all of that, you know, being a implant specialist in Brazil, which
yeah.
means nothing here.
Right.
I'm a GP placing implants.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is I was teaching specialists how to do this too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I got it from both sides.
Yep.
You know, I would get that the specialist never places the implant in the right position. And then I would get restorative doctor shouldn't be placing implants. And my whole thing is, whoever places the implant the best with the restorative in mind should be placing the implant.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And the 100%. Thing that smart specialists do is that they know if they have a GP that's placing implants, they're not going to place 100% of the implants.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to do the first molars and they're going to refer you the anterior one because now they're looking for it and they know how challenging it is.
Yeah, 100%.
And they're going to restore it well. So yeah, that is something that I've gotten so much. And for me, when I started talking about AI, because I started talking about AI early, like in 2018, I think, people told me, oh my gosh, it's going to take over our jobs. We're not going to be able to practice dentistry anymore. How can you be building something like this? I mean, you're crazy. People told me a lot of crazy stuff.
Well, I heard it too. I don't know if you remember this, but it was 3-4 years ago. I was up in Canada doing a study club thing, and I was talking about Lightside Live, and I made a comment that, you know, you were, you know, the one of the clinical founders of Pearl, and I witnessed that, had that experience firsthand. It's going to take our jobs. I don't trust it. Blah blah blah. And so instead of judgment, because knowing you, I felt at least like I knew more about it than the average bear dentist.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why do you feel that way? What are your concerns? Mm-hmm. What do you think the ramifications are? This is going back to what I said before about don't be judgmental. Don't let your emotions take over. Don't get into amygdala hijack. Take a step back and go, what do you mean by that? Well, why do you feel that way? Where is this coming from? What are you concerned about? Like, it's open-ended question 101. I think the other thing, which we haven't talked about yet, is supporting other colleagues when these kind of things happen on social media or in person, right? So if you're a witness on social media where something comes up and you see somebody railing against somebody else, say something in a manner that, you know, is makes sense, if you will. I mean, obviously, if somebody's being incredibly nasty, that may not be something you want to jump into, but let's talk about that a little bit. Like,
I've seen this happen with you. Sorry to interrupt you. I've seen this happen with you where you've said something, someone has come back to you very nasty on social media, like on a forum or a Facebook group, and you've de-escalated the situation.
Yeah.
When you come back and say, you know, why the negativity? I was just trying to have a conversation. I have a different opinion.
Yeah.
Instead of if you came back even harder, then they come back even harder, then they come back even harder, and it just turns into a fight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the curiosity over judgment thing. I think, talk about defending other colleagues. I'll tell you another story. This is a story I didn't tell you ahead of time because I want to see your reaction. So a number of years ago, I was asked to speak up in Canada at the ODA. Great meeting. And it's kind of a long story short, but at the time I was working for Vita, they offered me a honorarium. Then when the board, I'm going to use the term realized that I worked for Vita, they pulled the honorarium because I worked for a company, despite that it was my work and my time and so forth. And it is what it is. No big deal. So I'm up there and I'm meeting the gentleman that I had this, shall we say, conversation with. And I'm not a tall man. And so I'm standing there. He's there. He's about 6 foot, 6 foot two. And there's four other members of the board. And we're talking. He's like, oh, I really appreciate your understanding, blah, blah, blah. And then he extends a hand for those that are listening. And he kind of waves his hand like back and forth, like an airplane waving its wings. And he goes, I didn't think you'd be so short. And the other members on the board audibly gasped. And they looked at him and they said, why would you say that? Apologize to Dr. Mendelsohn immediately. And so
it was
like a very weird and very reassuring situation all at the same time. So I think that's a good example. Like, how can we come together to support each other in the face of cyberbullying or just the indecency of it, not even necessarily bullying, just inappropriateness of it. Like how can we sit there and think and just not let it continue? Because honestly, it's like a schoolyard bully. If nobody calls the bully on it, he or she's just going to continue, right?
Well, one of the things that they teach my son in his classes, you know, we did that bully-proof jujitsu camp, and the whole jujitsu that he does is called bully-proof.
Mm-hmm.
They teach them that bullies pick on kids that don't stand up for themselves.
There you go. Yeah, so, there you go.
You know, if you don't stand up for yourself, then they keep bullying because they think that's okay.
100%. 100%.
I've got a story about not judging your colleagues in the clinical realm.
Mm-hmm.
So someone told me this at one of the lectures that I was giving. A patient came into their practice that had a retained root tip.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in just saying, the previous dentist was such an idiot. Can you believe he left this root tip in? And now I've got to get it taken out. And there's, you know, maybe there's an infection. I got to pay all this money. And the dentist, she was like, do you know who the dentist was? I mean, I'd love to talk to them and just see like what was happening with the situation. I think they found out. So this dentist calls the previous dentist, who's a neurosurgeon, by the way.
Mm.
says, "Hey, I've got Mrs. Jones in the room," and he says, "Oh my gosh, how is she doing?"
Yep.
She says, "What are you talking about?" "Well, when I was extracting the tooth, her blood pressure went up 250 over 170, and we stopped the procedure. We got her stable, and we told her she needed to go see her MD or go to the emergency room. How is she doing?"
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Now, think about this, right? Had this new dentist, had she not thought rationally and thought, "Oh my gosh, yeah, why would they leave this root tip?" Now, let's not even go into the clinical side of, we leave root tips all the time on purpose now
Exactly.
because it can be less dangerous, like when you're close to a nerve or when you could cause more damage by trying to remove it. We have apicoectomies, or sorry, not apicoectomies, coronectomies that we do sometimes where we actually leave the root on a wisdom tooth, for example. I did it all the time. So not only that, but I think I used to do this so often that I would see the open margin, the recurrent decay, the bad aesthetics, and I would blame the dentist. Now, there's a way of talking to the patient about facts without incorporating the previous practitioner. So you can still say this lower premolar has decay around the margin. You can still say this margin on this crown is really not ideal and you're catching floss and there may be some recurrent decay. You can still say that the root canal doesn't go all the way to the apex and you do have what looks like a periapical radiolucency there. Notice how when I said that, I never mentioned the previous doctor.
Correct.
So you're talking about facts, which is a lot of what we talk about when we're talking about communication, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're just literally reporting your findings, which, for whatever reason, that whole justifiable criticism thing I mentioned earlier and this really stuck with me. It's like if you come in, your obligation is to the patient. And so what your obligation is to share with them what your findings are. Right. And as you very well put, it's without the editorialization of why the findings might be the way. That's irrelevant insofar as the fact that, well, that's just the way it is. So this is our finding. This is what we can do to fix it. Why is it that way? Well, I don't know. It's like, it's not for me to say.
I like that. I like how you said that. It's irrelevant what happened then. This is what's here now. It's just like it reminds me of when patients say, "I have x-rays from 5 years ago. Should I bring those?" No, because they're not relevant anymore, to be honest with you, unless we're looking at how something grew over time. But more
My
than likely, I'm never even going to look at those radiographs. Don't even bother getting them. We have to take new ones anyways. Don't even bother
I had a
getting them.
member of my close family call me because they were looking for a new dentist and they were asking my opinion. They weren't judging, they were asking my opinion, and they were kind of upset over the fact that they calling this new office, they wouldn't tell them what their fee schedule was for crowns. And this family member thought that that was a good thing to ask about because it's a common procedure. And, I could hear Frank Spear in my head. And I was like, well, they didn't answer you because it depends. There's teeth in the front, teeth in the back, blah, blah, blah. And so after I talked them off the ledge and I said, what about them not answering you with a fee schedule and dollars bothered you? Well, if they can't tell me that, I'm not so sure that, I can trust them. And I was like, well, wait a minute. It's not that simple. And
Maybe
so,
I'll trust them more, actually.
correct. So again, it all goes back to curiosity versus judgment. Why did that occur? Why did they say that? Why did they not say that? Those kind of things. But to go out of our way to bring our colleagues down a peg, is not exactly the way I would want to live and the way you want to live either. I'm beholden to say something else on top of that, which is this. Don't allow the 5% of jerks in the world to guide your behavior to the 95%. And just because a colleague treated you poorly doesn't give you the right to treat somebody else poorly. That other person's bad decision is now amplified because of your subsequent behavior that you've chosen to engage with. So, I see this a lot, particularly within the world of specialists and the referring case, where some odd percentage of the referring offices, let's call it what it is, don't refer comprehensively.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just like, well, everybody stinks and nobody cares and nobody does what they really, is it nobody or is it a percentage of that? So we've got to be really careful about our life experiences with the minority of any individual of any one given group and not lay that over as a general rule on everybody else. It's a common human thing to do, but it's something that it's something I believe we need to avoid.
I like how you said that, curiosity versus judgment. I think that's something that I will try to nail into my own head as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've seen, as much as I've seen negative comments on Facebook groups and forums, I've also seen a lot of really positive comments come at it, like prefacing their comment by saying, I want you to know that I'm not judging you on this. In my opinion, that prep that you did, how I would have done it would have been this. We may have learned in different ways, but this is how I've done it. I think I really hate when people say, I've been doing this for 30 years, and that is supposed to justify that they're doing it correctly. That really bothers me for some reason.
Well, it should, because look, I graduated dental school in 1996. Do you know how much has changed since 1996? Saying I've been doing this for 30 years and I know better in some degrees is saying I graduated dental school and haven't learned since.
Like, right.
That's kind of scary, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Now, I know a lot comes with experience, and I
realize
this
of course. Of
myself.
Course.
However, we need to stay up on the latest things. We need to know that dogmas happen in dentistry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about one of my other favorite speakers, Iñaki Gamborena, who has the most beautiful slides and cases you'll ever see in the perioprost world.
Yep.
He says 50% of what I'm going to show you today is right, 50% is wrong. But it's up to you to figure out which 50% is wrong. And we may not know for another 10 years.
Yeah, it's true. It's totally
and
true.
That is those dogmas. I have a whole lecture about dogmas in implant dentistry specifically,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because you get these ideologies, you get these specific camps. Oh, if you're trained by this person, if you're trained by this person, I mean, nothing is worse than when you have someone trained from Spear and from Kois and from Panky talking about occlusion, right? I mean, it is like religion to these people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just understand, maybe we all just really don't know the answer.
Yeah. You forgot about LVI in that group, by the way.
Yes, that's true. I did forget about LVI. Yeah.
But I see that in coaching circles as well.
Yes.
With different methodologies and so forth. Now, I will say, though, that I've never seen, believe it or not, I've never seen a really nasty response in coaching groups, which I would hope would make some sense, but yet there's dogmas there too. I think there's dogmas in any profession, right?
Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think this is a good topic.
It was, absolutely.
My takeaway from today is curiosity versus judgment. I wrote it down because I liked how you said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even if you prefaced these disagreements with people as, hey, I just want you to know before I say this, I'm coming from curiosity, not judgment. In my opinion, I would have done it this way, or I would like to question why you did it that way, or has that been working with you? I'm really just curious about this.
Yeah.
Even if you preface that.
Yeah.
I think that opens them up to say, I'm not coming at you as judging you.
Yeah.
And I can still say the same thing.
Yeah, you could even come at it from, hey, I saw your case, I saw your post. I'm really kind of curious to learn from you. My background would have led me to do it this way. I'm very anxious to hear your methodologies behind why you approach the case the other way so that I can learn something. And so, you know, when done with transparency that way, that can really open up a lot of doors and a really great transparent conversation, right? So,
yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening today. If you're interested in more that we do, go to wellnessanddentistry.com. That has Martin's coaching. If you want to bring him in to train your team, that has my complication compliance method, my Lightside Academy, of course, our 2-day course, our Lightside Live course. All the links are on Wellness and Dentistry. And if you like today, send this to a colleague that you may think may want to hear this. I know that when my brothers or my friends or my colleagues send me a podcast, it goes to the top of my list, and that would really help us out. We do this podcast to give all of you listeners a ton of free content. We both have paid content. We have coaching and online courses and lectures, but we know that people want free content. So this is the easiest way to share our free content. And if you're interested in going further, then come and pay for our more intense paid content.
Yep.
But thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry. Bye-bye.
Take care.